you're probably wondering, what in the world am I going to learn here? First thing I'm going to tell you is that I hope you'll come back for all three sessions, because it's really important. Now, the last one, I'll just start with the end in mind, okay? And the last one will be a lot of illustrations, okay? And some practical, how does this work kind of stuff, okay? And if you really are interested in what you hear, then you can see how that actually takes place, okay? Session two is going to be a lot more around some of the trends that are happening and what we're seeing from our perspective. And maybe you're like, well, where do you guys fit? And I'm going to start there in a moment to kind of let you know where do we fit in this whole ecosystem of development, fundraising, philanthropy, and I'll fill you in on that in just a moment. And then this morning, or this afternoon, this first session, what we want to do is look at what's happening with this great wealth transfer. Did you guys know there's a wealth transfer? Okay. All right. That's why I brought a couple of books. I got a question. Let's take a guess here. If you're not familiar with the largest transfer of wealth that's happened in the history of mankind, it's happening. Okay, so first thing I want to tell you is this is the best time in the history of mankind to raise money. It's incredible. The opportunities are endless. The amount of money that's available to what you're doing, it's enormous. It's just gigantic. I was sharing before I got started, right before I walked in, I was at Chris Tomlin. I played in a golf tournament with he and Toby Mack, and they did a big event last week at the Troubadour. Okay, you would know where that is, Chandler, out by the Grove. And Toby Mack had a ministry called Angel Armies, and they changed the name of that to Four Others. And if you're not familiar with Four Others, go look it up, okay? Let me just put it this way. When you put the right people in the room and you got the right cause, you can raise a lot of money. Okay, so we played golf that day. There were about 25 celebrities that flew in from all over the country. There was over $500,000 spent on putting on this event. Okay, so it was a one-day event playing golf and a dinner, and then the next night was a Chris Tomlin concert at Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. And what I saw was the most amazing weekend of generosity I've ever experienced in my life. It was remarkable. So we play golf, we finish, we go to dinner, and some of the entertainers that were there were, you know, they're A-list people, like Brooks and Dunn were there. Thomas Rhett was there. You guys know who Thomas Rhett is, right? Toby Mack sang. I could go on down a list. And they kind of set the tone by having an auctioneer come in that's all he does. And they had 10 items. And they told everybody in the room, we've got 10 items. We've got a goal to raise $10 million. And the purpose was they've been working in the foster care business for a long time. And so the two spectrums, right? Putting them with moms or families, right? That's hard work. And that's been really a lot of their focus, according to what I heard. But they've really kind of shifted gears, and they're now focusing on those that are aging out at 18, okay? And the statistics, and this was literally all we heard, okay? So there wasn't a whole lot of detail. It was, there's 23,000 kids that are aging out in the state of Tennessee at 18, and 80% of the boys that age out within 3 years are back in prison, are in prison, and 70% of the girls within 2 years are pregnant, and so the cycle continues. And so what they realize is they've been working very, very hard on the front end, and what they realize is they're not stopping anything of that cycle that was happening, and so they put a lot of attention on the back end, and they want to find 23,000 mentors for these kids. What a great idea. And so they're calling it 18-10, okay? And so the program was to actually build an app that and give these kids when they turn 18 and they're aging out, as bad as the system may be, and I'm not putting it down, but I'm seeing some heads nod, it's not perfect, fair enough, okay? As bad as that may be, it gets worse when they leave, okay? And so when that happens, they need more help. And so they're giving them their phone, and they don't get everything on the phone, but they're getting a phone, and they have access to a mentor. And from there, there's this whole opportunity that opens up for these kids when they get out of school or when they age out. And so the goal was to raise $10 million over 2 years. They raised $10 million with 10 auction items. 10 auction items in one night. While this was taking place, the president of Tennessee State University was live streaming this because it was that they had so many entertainers. It was a great thing to entertain with. He calls in and says, "I got 23 full scholarships for these kids that are aging out." Another offered 11 scholarships. So by the time the night was over, there were almost 40 full scholarships available to these kids. And can you imagine if every kid that aged out had a full ride to go to college? Would that change the dynamics of their future? Yes, it would. And so it was just an amazing, I'm telling you that story because, you know, God knows how to prepare things a lot better than I do. And he had me in a moment where I was just in tears because of kids that night, literally. And to see the generosity and the heartbeat of the people, I mean, you can't imagine the people that were ready to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on auction items, because it wasn't because of that. It was because of the kids, and they wanted to do something in their state and make a difference where they were. Okay? It was just remarkable. And so what you have is an opportunity with your message. There's no doubt the message is as clear as it's ever been. Our culture's hurting. The country's in a different place than it's ever been. And kids should be at the forefront because they're our future. Okay, and you guys are serving the least of these. And so we all know the scriptures that relate to that. But the other side of the coin is why I'm here. And so what I do, I've spent a lifetime between being a business owner and working in development. Okay, so prior to this, just to rewind just quickly to let you know, I was at Lipscomb University. It's true for, I think, 7 years. When I left there, I went to a startup company with two neurocognitive scientists from Vanderbilt University. We started a company called S2 Cognition, and we work with 14 NFL teams and 12 Major League Baseball teams and University of Alabama and all the Power 5 schools that are out there, all their sports. And so we measure the instincts of their brain that determine their what they do on the field. So if a guy jumps off sides, he's got low impulse control. So we can actually predict what somebody can do, and so that's why it's very valuable when you're recruiting or when you're fixing to pay somebody millions of dollars. So that was what I did after Lipscomb. I sat on the board of the Middle Tennessee National Christian Foundation board in Nashville. How many of y'all know about anything about donor advised funds? Okay. Raise your hand, okay? A couple of you. All right, so who raised their hand? Who knows what a donor advised fund is? Okay, Chandler, I'm not giving you the book. I'm gonna give that one to you. That's how much I love you. Who else does, okay? Got another one back there. Pass this back here to her. Here's another book for you if you know what a donor advised fund is. And I think we had three in the room. And that doesn't surprise me. How many of you ever heard of a DAF? No? Okay. That's okay, okay? But let me give you some context. When I left Lipscomb University, I thought I knew a little bit about fundraising because I also had spent about 18 years running a consulting business and doing capital campaigns for Christian schools. I actually did one for Mount Dora and worked with James and did some work there and several children's homes around the country, universities and parachurch groups around the world. And so... that was my background, and when I went to Lipscomb, we raised a little bit of money while we were there. God bless that. And I realized something when I went to an event. And so this is what opened my eyes to what you're going to learn about in the next three sessions. So we had, I had an event that I was invited to go to Hobby Lobby. You guys know, heard about Hobby Lobby? Okay. Hobby Lobby is their owner, David Green, and the Green family are the largest Christian philanthropist in the world. Okay. Last year, they're our number one client. They're our biggest client. Last year, they gave away just under $600 million. Okay. And they do that every year. They give away 50% of their profits every year from Hobby Lobby, if you didn't know that. It's pretty remarkable. And so I go to this event, and I'm encouraged to invite some big donors, right? Some ultra wealthy people from Lipscomb. So I take a few of our board members. And when we got back, the night we got back, I got an email from one of them that says, I need to go see my attorney. Can you help me with understanding how do I change my will? Here's what I'm thinking about doing. And he did a codicil to his will. So in other words, he went in and he was going to give his kids X amount of dollars and leave so much for charity. He flipped it from being there that weekend. The next person, it took about another 6 months or so of meeting with this gentleman, but once he had gone out there, it totally changed his mindset around what he was going to leave to his children versus what he was going to leave to charity. And he said he wanted to go ahead and do it now, and he made the largest gift in the history of Lipscomb, $23 million to build a college of business. And that was all. And if you ask him, he'd say, it just totally changed my mindset. I never thought about things like that. And so between the three or four different people, there was about $50 million that was committed, not because I did anything other than invite them to an event. But here's the thing I learned from that, is there's another whole way of giving for the uber wealthy, okay? That I didn't know anything about, to be quite honest. And I had been doing fundraising, consulting for 18 years, the traditional way. And so if you read the title of this, who knows what the title is of this session? Say it again. Revolutionary generosity, but what's underneath it? Ask what is possible, not what is traditional. So my favorite scripture is Ephesians 3:20. Y'all can quote it with me in unison if you want to. Now, to him who is able to do immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine, according to his power that's at work within us. I love that passage because it's what we think is possible is not even in the hemisphere of what God can see. If we can just open up to what's possible. Okay, and so it's what's so easy to do is to get caught in the idea of how do you raise money. How many of y'all really want to learn how to raise money? Okay, when you leave here, if your mindset hasn't shifted, because right now what is happening and what has been happening with this transfer of wealth I mentioned a moment ago, how much is it? And why is it happening? And what's it going to do? And who's going to receive it? And how do you play a part of that? It's $60 to $70 trillion that is changing hands right now, and it's already started. And it will happen as my mom and dad will pass away, and others that are that same age, they're passing away. It's the largest transfer of wealth in the history of mankind. Now you say, well, how do we get a, so what? It's so big, how do we play a part in that? Well, there's a way to play a part in that, okay? Because the people that you know, you may not have thought about them the correct way, which is the way I was thinking. As a fundraiser, I typically looked at things from the perspective of how do I know how much to ask or how do I get a major gift? And we're going to talk a little bit about what the traditional thinking is around fundraising, okay? We're going to get to that. So that's kind of what's going to happen. I hope you're like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. What is available, and then how do you plug into it? And here's the best news of all. You don't have to learn anything other than how to get someone to the table. That's it. That's it. You don't have to learn about S corporations, C corporations, partnerships, all of the things, the buy, the sell here, the M&A markets, and where I spend my time every day is with lawyers and CPAs. Okay, you don't need to learn any of that. But what you do need to do is understand that there is a whole language that's attached, and understand what they're looking what's the message you need to send to the ultra wealthy? How do you communicate with them? And how many of you believe that major donors are what's going to keep us in business as ministries going forward? Okay, the ministry pool has changed. The next generation, my kids that are coming up, if you don't know this, they're giving not to organizations, they're giving to things that they care about, okay? And it's not to buildings and things of that nature. They want to see change. They want to see a cell phone in a kid's hand with a mentor, that they can see something happening with it, tangible. But what I want to share with you is they're not the ones with the money right now. But right now is the time to understand, how do you go find those people? And you're like, well, we don't have those kind of donors. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Okay? And if you don't, I'm going to tell you how to go find them. Okay? So that's what you're going to leave here with, is hopefully there's a whole nother way of raising money, and it'll blow your mind. Okay? So let me just run through a couple of these slides with you that actually were prepared for this session. We'll get started on that now. Okay. So who are we? The Signatory is a global community and movement dedicated to creating eternal impact. What that basically means is, how many of you have heard of Fidelity, Schwab, Vanguard, American Endowment Group? There's a lot of these. There's a lot of groups out there that have a donor advised fund. Think of it like this. A lot of people give other things other than cash, right? How many of you guys receive something other than cash at your organization? Okay, could be stock, it could be an old car, a boat, okay? Anything outside of something that's liquid that can be valued, or somebody can say this is a valuation of that, okay, is an asset. So we'll call it asset giving. Some people call it complex giving, but we'll just call it asset-based giving, all right? So anything that's an asset, a home, a piece of property, jewelry, closely held shares of a company, okay? I could go on and on and on, and there's all the artifacts in the Museum of the Bible, for instance. Those are asset gifts, okay? Anything you can place a value on. So what the Signatory does is we're like one of these other groups like Fidelity Schwab. We're a DAF sponsor, okay? And so we have donors. We're a 501c3, and the reality is we're like a charitable bank. People give. They can give cash, they can give shares of their company, they can give anything they want to give, okay? And they get a deduction when they give it to us. We own it, okay? Just like you would if they gave it to you. And then they have advisor rights. So they can say, here's where I'd like to give it away, okay? And this market has grown over 300% in the last 10 years. Matter of fact, 10 years ago, today there's over 1 million donor advised funds in America, and they're predicting it to grow at over 40% a year going forward. And you may say, well, how's that going to impact us? How many of you already receive gifts from donor advised funds? Okay. So why are people doing that? And why is this an important thing for you guys to know? Because your biggest donors and more of your donors either have them or they're going to have them. Because they get better deductions from giving, okay, to a DAF, a donor advised fund, and they have anonymity. They're not going to show up on anyone's 990, okay? And so they want total anonymity, and in today's cancel culture, if you're a major donor, you want a public-facing company, or you're a guy in the community that you sell to the local community and you just don't know where that's going to land in this world today, you want anonymity because you can lose your business if you give to the wrong thing. How many of y'all believe that's true? Okay, this is not anything we created. Matter of fact, this started, Donor Advised Fund started in 1914 or something like that, back when the Rockefellers put it in play, okay? And they realized there's got to be a way to give assets where we can use these assets and save taxes. So that's basically what I tell people. If you want to, if you want to write anything down, you don't get anything else from this session, write this down. And this is what you can share with your donors. If you would like to save taxes and give more money to the things you love, we should have a conversation. Okay? How many of you think that your donors would like to save, your biggest donors would like to save taxes? They're the ones that care the most because they're paying the most, right? And so when you can now speak the language that they're looking to hear, okay, and you got something of value to tell them, it changes the conversation. So this is who we are. That's what the kind of work we do. So people will gift their company before they sell it. They get a fair market value valuation on that. They get a deduction for that. And there's a lot of creative things that we do. For instance, okay, this will just give you one idea. How many of you have been to the Museum of the Bible? Wow, one? Good for you. How many of y'all know there is a Museum of the Bible? All right, if I had another book, I'd give it away. I'd give you a book. I'm going to send you a book. All right, the Museum of the Bible is in Washington, D.C., right? It's an amazing place. And I would encourage you to go and take donors with you there.
It takes 6 days to get through it,
though. It's huge. You're right. You're right. Yeah, that's right. You can go to the Ark, too. That's not a bad spot either. Yeah. But here's the thing. The Museum of the Bible was started by the Green family that owns Hobby Lobby. All right? They're the ones that started and built it. Well, how did they fund it? How does it continue to be funded? Well, next door to the Museum of the Bible is another piece of property. That piece of property is like thousands and thousands of square feet of building and office space. And during 08, 09, y'all remember those fun years? Okay, if you don't, that's when the economy did this and the markets went crazy and prices went down to nothing. And they were buying up properties at that time at 20 cents on the dollar. And then they would turn around and gift those properties at fair market value. So if you paid $2 million or $10 million, it didn't matter to them. If they paid $10 million for it and they got a $200 million deduction, is that a good deal? That's a real good deal. And so they were buying properties, giving them away. That's getting ready to happen again. That whole idea is getting ready to happen again because of foreclosures and where the markets are headed, okay? There will be a lot of properties that'll be available. But the Greens bought it, gave it to the Signatory, okay? So we own this building, and then they turned around and leased it out, okay, to government. And now it returns probably $15 million or more in revenue a year. And so now the Donor Advised Fund gets funded, and they gift that to a nonprofit. Okay? So if I didn't lose you there, okay, it was a purchase of a piece of property, 20 cents on the dollar. They got a huge valuation for it, and they got a deduction that they could carry forward for a long time. And now that gift is sitting at the Signatory, and it gets funded by the rent. And they turn around and gift that money to a nonprofit. So when we receive money or property or an asset, we can only gift it to a 501c3. And we have some grant policies that you need to know about. So what do we stand for? And why are we different than Fidelity, Schwab, and Vanguard? Okay. Number one, we believe that life begins at conception. So we will not fund anything or grant money to anything that's opposed to that. We believe the only way to heaven is through Jesus Christ, none of the isms. Okay, so we're not going to grant to an Islamic, in any of those kind of things. And number three is we believe marriage is between one man and one woman. And we're unabashedly like, here's who we are. Okay, and so those are the granting policies. And so how many of you guys are all 501c3s? So all of you qualify to receive money that we have, right? Okay, the question is, how do you get it, right? And so there's some things that we've done around that even that's kind of unique, but that's kind of who we are. Our vision is to literally write the last check to solve the world's greatest problems. And we're doing things by convening, like 2 weeks ago, How many of you are familiar with Life Collective? Good. This is new for y'all. Write this down. Life Collective, because this is your space. Life Collective was started by David Green's daughter-in-law, Lauren McAfee. That's her name, Lauren McAfee. And the purpose of this group was to convene all the pro-life organizations in America, okay? And they just met, and we brought a bunch of donors together at Chick-fil-A in Atlanta 2 weeks ago, and went up to the Windshape Foundation, or up to their place in Dalton, Georgia, and spent a day and a half telling the story about how all of us are siloed. Guess what's the real problem here? Is you're all siloed. You all have your own 501c3. You may disagree with this, but I'm telling you what's happening with big philanthropy is people are coming together. People are coming together because big tech and big media has left the station, right? And there's been windmills and wells, okay, that's been happening inside our brotherhood for sure, where a farmer, if he's got his own farm, what would he do? He'd dig a well to supply water for who? His own cattle. And he would need electricity, so he would put a windmill up, and it'd generate this electricity for who? Himself. But his neighbor next door has a farm too. Well, what if his well ran dry? Too bad. I only have enough water for my cows. And what about building a windmill? Well, you see where I'm going? We're all siloed in ministry today. And what I'm going to share with you is this has already been unlocked and you don't even know about it. Okay? There's an ecosystem that is available now that serves all the churches in America and all the 501c3s and all the city ministries. And you need to know about it. And I'm going to share more about what that is. Okay? And it's incredible what can come from that. Because guess what? We're all trying to serve the same cause, right? You're trying to do what we're trying to do is solve the world's greatest problems. Those problems for us are children. That's one of them. That's one of our biggest causes. Okay? And life, that's one of our grant policies. We care a lot about it. The other is the translation of Scripture. And so how do we work on those things? We convene the organizations that are doing the same thing. And so about 7 years ago, write this down if you're not familiar with this, called Illuminations. Anybody heard of Illuminations? Okay, it's the group that meets in the Dallas airport once a month. And so we've been convening these people, and when they came together with the Green family and Mark Green, they come together, and guess what? There's all these Bible translators out there doing one chapter here, and they were all doing their own thing. And when they came together, they got organized and said, you do this one, you do this one, we'll raise money to get it all done, okay? And it went from being a 135-year project to get all 6,000 dialects, the New Testament, 7 years ago till today, by the end of 2035, all 6,000 dialects will have the New Testament. Hallelujah. That would not have happened if they hadn't have come together and said, how do we work together to solve these big problems, right? We're doing that now with Life and Life Collective, okay? And so it's convening around big ideas to solve the problem, and we know the amount of money it takes to solve them, okay? So whether it's water or children or Scripture, this is an issue that I'm just asking you to pray about and just to kind of make you think, oh my, I've never thought about it like that. But let me ask you a question. This transfer of wealth, it's $60 to $70 trillion. If we had 1% of that money flow into ministry, that's $60 to $70 billion, that would fund every church's needs in America, every Christian university's needs in America. It would endow them forever. It'd serve every one of the child care services in America forever. It would take care of, and it's happening But we have our own windmills and wells. And there needed to be an ecosystem. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. And so what I'm asking you to do is to think, how does that happen? And what do we do? And this money that's moving, you guys can play a part in that. So that's what we do. That's our vision, is to bring all, to solve the world's greatest problems. How we do it is to inspire and facilitate revolutionary biblical generosity across generations. Okay? So we educate. That's what we're going to do the next couple of sessions on what's happening. Where's the real money that's out there? I'm talking about big money that's out there. How do you go get it? Okay? And how do you facilitate that? And how do you do that across generations? So what do you think the Bible says about generations and family? This is y'all's business here. Family, right? Go look up the sons of Asaph, David's chief musician, and you'll find in Scripture, and I can give you all, you can go to BillHigh.com. He's one of our founders. If you don't write that down, okay, there's a lot of one thing you got to get here. You got to go to BillHigh.com. But Bill High is the leading voice in America when it comes to family legacy. He really is. Matter of fact, Chandler has set through a family legacy workshop with us. The Rechabites. Go study the Rechabites. Even as late as the 1800s, the Rechabites today are still faithful. And the Lord said there will always be a faithful Rechabite. They're the ones who were nomads. They couldn't live in, they had to live in tents and they travel around. They still do. When God said always, he meant always, right? And they still are. We still know of these people, okay? And so family is a big piece of this. But so where we are here is to inspire, facilitate revolutionary biblical generosity for generations. How many of you would like to see the pattern stop where there's no more need for foster care? Okay? I mean, wouldn't that be the BHAG? If that's it, then does it take money? Okay? Do you know how much? See, that's a good starting question, isn't it? What's a framing question for your real problem? Is if it took money, you got to solve that problem sooner or later. If you knew, then you could come together and say, if we could raise this, then we could do that, right? Okay? And there's a number. We figured it out for water. We figured it out for translation. It was $1.3 billion to translate 6,000 dialects into the New Testament. $1.3 billion. And we've raised now over $700 million of that. And so that number keeps dropping. And as soon as the money comes in, the translations happen faster and faster. Okay, and who owns all this money? G-O-D. God. All right, let me back up. I'm going to start principle number one. Who owns everything? God owns it all. We are stewards, and we are blessed to bless others. Those are the three principles when it comes to money and donors. Okay, so the number one thing you're going to have to do today and tomorrow and those two sessions is get fear out of the way. Fear will cripple anything that you can think about when it comes to major gifts. Okay, because you're like, how do I relate to them? Or I don't know how to talk to them. Get rid of the fear, because they don't own anything anyway. They're just like us. They're stewards over something. Okay, and it's our job to be like, I want to be like a lion for the Lord. Okay, and I am going to say and share things that are going to help them. And so I can't wait to get in front of that next person to help them do something great for the Lord. How about that? I mean, that's where you got to be when you're dealing with your major donors. And if it's not, if that's just where it is, it's in your heart. Okay? God owns it, we don't. So, that's who we are. How do we make a difference? Our revolutionary approach to generosity is making a real and impact. Lasting impact on the world, like what we're doing with translation, like what we're doing with water, okay? In 2021, there were over 24,700 grants worth more than $470 million was distributed to 4,200 charities. That was last year. So in our 22-year history as our 501c3, we've brought in $5 billion and we've given away over $4 billion. And we're growing so fast right now because businesses are selling, by the way. Okay, if I were to ask you how many businesses in America sell every month, just take a guess. There's no bad answer here because that's not your world. You're not supposed to know this. Just take a guess. 10,000 a month, a little high. I wish that was the case. 5,000, a little high. Who said 500? Okay, still a little bit high. Somewhere between 175 and 250 businesses in America sell every month. Okay, it's not a ton, but it's a lot. You start adding it up, right? And are they selling? Do you know anybody that's ever sold a business? Okay, here's an illustration. And where you're going to find and where most of this wealth sits, I got a call from an advisor with Ron Blue. Neither one of them would like me. Ron Blue, he's in Nashville, and he calls and says, I've got a couple of brothers that have been building parts for diesel engines in New York, in Utica, New York, and they're getting ready to sell their company. Can you help them? I'm like, I don't know. Let's see. And so I call them, we talk, and literally within a month, these guys have been building this for 25 plus years, pouring everything they have into it. They sold for over $150 million. They gave away, before they sold, they gave away the shares of their company that was worth $32 million. Okay, it was a nice gift. And now they're looking for places to give that money away. Okay, that's just one example. We have a friend in Texas, you Texans, okay, that he has been selling off property, and he's only sold about 5% of it, and he sold off currently about $500 million, and he put it all in his donor advised fund to give away. Okay? Those stories are out there all over the place. And you're like, how do we find these people? That's who we work with, okay? That's what happens. People live their life. They give these assets away, and that's what we've been doing. And this year, we've already done over $470 million in the first quarter. It's unbelievable. In the city of Nashville last year, it was over $175 million that was gifted just to the Signatory. And they're people that you may know, okay? And matter of fact, I know they are. And the question is, who's going to help those people? All right, let me give you another example. If you introduce someone to us and you know they're going to sell their business, or they've got a piece of property they have, or they got wealth, and they do something that saves them a lot of taxes, okay? And they may not even be a donor of yours, okay? That's what's cool. How do you find major donors? If you know somebody like that, you go talk to them and say, I don't know if you've heard about this, but let me share something. If you like to pay less taxes and give more of the things you love, 40%+, it's between 40 and 45% of those dollars come back to the ministry that introduces them to the idea. Not all of it, because people give to more than one thing, but 40% of it. And so we've been tracking that for a long time. And so where leads come from, those people want to bless somebody who blessed them. Does that make sense? Okay, let me keep going. So this $68 trillion wealth transfer, why the wealth is transferring? Because people are passing on. They're passing on, okay? My parents' age group, they're the ones who have built businesses. And most of the time, they build it for a lifetime and they sell it. But in today's economy, who became the fastest billionaire in America? Anybody know? Huh? Not Gates. It took Gates about 15 years to be a billionaire. It took Kylie Jenner less than 2 years. Okay? I could give you a list of people that became billionaires in the last 5 years that are under 30. Okay? Today's world is not build a business and keep pouring in and having employees and cost and all the stuff, right? And things, parts, inventory. But you do it online and you can become a billionaire pretty quick. There's a whole bunch of that going on. But the wealth transfer, why is it happening? Because they're passing on. And what is $68 trillion? 1%, as I mentioned, was $680 billion. That will take care of a lot of things, okay? The $68 trillion wealth transfer, this is by Boston College. The transfer is going to occur over the next 25 to 40 years by 2060. Heirs will receive $36 trillion, the heirs. Charities will receive $27 trillion. That's us. That's everybody in here. Do you see that? What part of this can this ministry of helping children that we're all a part of, what are we going to capture? $20.6 trillion through annual giving and $6.3 trillion through estate gifts. Now, estate taxes will claim over $5.6 trillion. Now, how many of you have in your ministry or your organization, you have an annual giving plan? Okay? Everybody needs one, right? It sustains the ministry, right? Pays the bills. How many of you have done a capital campaign in the past of some kind? Okay, some of you. How many of you have a major gift program of some kind? You target certain things for them, right? You segment them away from your annual givers, right? How many of you have an estate plan, estate giving plan? Okay, good. Everybody needs all of those, okay? But what no one has is a plan for asset-based giving, okay? And that's a plan that you need to add, all right? And what that looks like is very different, because what we do it takes place every year. There's two things that move the needle, okay, with the people that we work with and the people that you can work with. All right, number one is how many of us pay taxes? I'm not asking that the right way. This is being recorded. How many of you pay taxes? Come on, everybody pays taxes, right? All right, and so does everybody, hopefully. All right, taxes trigger giving. Okay? Taxes trigger giving. If you have an income of $1 million, then what are you paying in taxes a year? What's the highest tax bracket this year? If you don't know, I'm going to just tell you, it's 39%. Not including your state and your local, okay? So if you're making $1 million, you're going to be paying basically 400 grand, we'll just use round math, and depending on what state you live in, you're going to be paying another up to 10% in those taxes as well. So you've paid 50%. And then if you sell something and you've had, and it's an appreciated asset, how many of you know what capital gains are? Okay, how many of you love capital gains? Just get fired up over capital gains, don't you? Well, neither do our donors, because guess what that is? That's 23.8%. 3.8% of that is from the Obama health care, okay? That every one of us gets taxed on capital gains. That's where they got their money, okay? And it just, it's crazy. But it's 20% without that. So if I'm a business owner and I've sold something, not my salary or what I've earned, but I sell something that's worth $1 million, then I have the potential of having paid, get this, 63.8% of that in taxes. Wow. Now, if you can tell them, guess what, how would you like to pay less taxes and give more money, okay? and they eliminate 100% of the capital gains. They would like that. And if they could lower their federal tax, which is the $1 million number they're paying the 39% on, and they can lower that, and let's say they made a $500,000 gift, then they've just saved themselves, what's 40% of 500,000, 200 grand in real money. So now you've had a swing, okay, of the 200 you saved there and the capital gains of 20% is another, you've saved over $400,000 that they keep or give to charity on that same $1 million. Now that's fast math, and I'm not trying to lose you here. What I'm hoping you see is you can either pay 600 plus or you can keep 400. Which would you prefer? Okay? And guess what? You don't have to do any of the work here except introduce people to the right people. You remember my story going out to Oklahoma? The only thing I did well was make an introduction and said, how would y'all like to get on a private plane and fly to Oklahoma City and meet David Green? That was the extent of what I did. And they came back and it was worth $50 million. So it's thinking differently, isn't it? Okay? And they didn't have to fly private. They could. They would have flown their own stuff, but somebody was willing to give it. All right, so that's what's happening. This is where I want you guys to focus right here. On that piece and then on this piece is estate gifts. Because here's the thing. The two things that are going to trigger people giving like this, these big gifts, paying taxes and selling companies. Okay? That's what does it. Or if they've got a lot of real estate. And we'll talk more about who these segments are and how do you get to them. Okay? So that's just a little bit there. That's the end of the slides. So what I want to do is cover with you guys now a couple of things here. How do we do that with you? Okay? And who actually owns, let me see, this one should be on here. Yeah, who holds it? Sorry, I did have another one. So who holds this? Who has the money? The war generation that believed in family, faith, and freedom, right? That's grandparents today, okay? My mom and dad. It's the boomer business owners, okay? And these are the segments of some of them that you're going to need to say, okay, I need to look at my database, my donor base. How many of you have ever gone through your donor base and identified who your business owners are? Okay? And know what the business is. And know how many employees they have. And know what their annual revenues are. And know how they're held. Basically, are they a C-Corp, S-Corp, LLC, whatever. Okay? These are things that you don't have to know. We'll find out. But you got to know who owns the business. So let's start right here. Real estate, business owners, now these are going to pass away, and most people are attacking them in ministry with one tool, okay, and that's through an estate gift, okay? I'm talking about annual gifts. I'm talking about gifts that come to you this year, okay? All right? These are dollars that are unlocked. They're not estate gifts that come in 20 years, okay? And so if you go talk to my dad today and you say, hey, Al, what are you going to do with the assets that you have? Because what are your plans? What are you thinking about? And he's going to tell you, well, I'm going to leave it to the children's home at Raintree. I'm going to leave it to, I can tell you the places it's going to, okay? And he goes, I'm not going to ruin my kids. I know what I'm getting, and it isn't a whole lot. And that's kind of been his deal, all right? But you know what? There's a lot of people with a lot of assets today that don't know what they're going to do. Or they've got information that has said to them, I'm going to leave it all to my kids. You want to ruin your kids? Leave them all that money. Okay? Here's another great question to ask anyone that's up here. How much is enough for your children? They don't know. I know this because I ask the question all the time. Or if this person owns a business, and guess what? They're trying to think about succession planning. We're not talking about estate planning. We're talking about succession planning. Okay? And they got three kids. How do you deal with that? So the question, and I got a whole bunch of questions tomorrow that you can walk in and say, can we talk, what are your plans for succession? How many of your children are involved in your business? These aren't too personal. They want to tell you about that, right? They love telling about their business and their family. What's the number one thing most people care about outside the Lord? Family, okay? And if you can help them with their family, and what's the second thing outside of that if I'm a business owner? My business, right? And you can help them, you're going to have something that's really, really valuable to them. So this guy right here has got three kids and he's got a business and he doesn't know what he's going to do with it. Well, here's some ideas. Have you thought about this? How about if I introduce you to somebody that works with the wealthiest Christian business owners in the country? How would you like to know what they're doing? Would you care to learn how they're doing what they're doing with their businesses? So I get a call one day from a gentleman named Frank Harrison, who is the largest Coca-Cola bottler in America. He lives in Charlotte. He owns Coca-Cola Bottling Consolidated out of Charlotte. They're one of 13 families that lived in Chattanooga, and they paid $1 for their deal. Okay, there's only two families left out of that original 13. But he calls me one day and he says, Can you introduce me to some families that have thought well about their giving? I'm like, what are you looking for? He goes, I just don't know. I just want to make sure I'm doing what the Lord. I got all this money and I want to steward it well. What families do you know that have processed well and thought about how to plan their giving well? So I sent him on a tour of five families around America to go meet and sit down, and one-on-one they discussed, well, how do you think about it? What about your business? You think that wasn't valuable to him? People don't know this stuff because they're not getting this kind of counsel from their CPAs or their estate planners, their attorneys. So let me clue you in on this. What I do, I never believed this. When I started doing this kind of work, I was told CPAs don't get what you do, what we do. I'm like, how could they not get it? These things have been around forever. What's a CPA's number one concern? They do your taxes, but their number one concern, you can ask any of them, is that whenever that tax reform gets finished and they sign their name at the bottom of it, that they're not going to get in trouble for signing off on something that was incorrect or going to cause a problem. That's their number one concern. Okay, and their job is to make sure that they don't do anything that's going to be, quote, let's just say, flexible. Okay, and that's not to mean this is illegal or at all, but I'm just saying they don't know these things. They don't use this because they don't look from the lens of philanthropy. All right, they're looking from the lens of how do we save taxes, how do we deduct, how do we do that, but not this. Estate planners don't know this. Why? Because the number one thing an estate planning attorney has on his mind is preservation of wealth, okay, not giving it away. So 75% of all the money that comes into the signatory or any donor advisor, well, us, Fidelity Schwab Vanguard, they're at about 15%. 75% that comes in every year goes out. So we don't keep the money, okay? You need to know that. But this is an important thing to know. You need to know who these people are, your grandparents, what conversations are you having with them, okay? Your business owners, real estate and business. Real estate is the number one best gift of an appreciated asset to give away because you can put it in a donor advised fund and it can stay there forever. And you get a fair market value deduction for it. So if somebody bought a piece of property in wherever you're from and it became very valuable over the years, how many of you know property prices have increased? Okay, and everybody's like, I can't believe how much property has increased. What is the thing that should trigger in your mind? For me, I'm thinking, they got money to give. that's all I can see, is they are sitting on an appreciated asset and they don't know what to do with it, okay? People have houses in Nashville and in Austin, Texas, and in Denver, Colorado, and I could go around. I could just, it's all over the place. In Nashville, they appreciated like 14 or some odd percent. I heard in the mountains up near Fairfield Glade, 40% increase last year in property values. So what if I own a piece of property and it grew 40%? Or if I built a house for $150,000, now today's worth $600,000. Okay? People are sitting on the assets. The wealth is not in cash. Okay? So know this. We've all been fishing for money in a 2% pond. Let me explain. 90% of all the wealth in America is tied up in appreciated assets. Okay, closely held shares of a company, real estate, anything of value like that. Okay, that's in their balance sheet. Okay, 90%. 10% of the wealth is in cash or is liquid. But here's the problem. We've been taught you give away and you save, right? Make all you can, give all you can, save all you can, whatever that, you know. And 10% is in cash. And the money that people are saving for retirement, either in 503B plans or 401K plans, 8% of that cash, of that 10, is in a retirement fund, which leaves our donors, and here's why this traditional way of thinking is so broken, okay? We've been trying to raise money out of a 2% pond. That's all that's left over for people to give from. And so when you say, well, they're making X amount of money, they probably could give Y. May be true. But are you following what I'm saying? Okay?
So your strategy is go to the
90% of the asset. Talk about balance sheet giving versus checkbook giving.
And the way they do that is to move it to some kind of fund or trust? Or
not a trust. They need to put it in a donor advised fund because there's different tax implications. So for instance, I told you there's over a million donor advised fund and it's grown over 300%. Well, there's only 40,000 private foundations, private family foundations. How many of you know somebody that's got one of those that gives to you? Okay, guess what? Those are decreasing at about 20% a year. Because if I give to if I have a private foundation, I have to pay for my tax return every year, which typically is about $20,000. We've got a lot of them in our business. They have to file a 990. They have to have board meetings, and they give away only 5% of what's in the total. So they typically use it as an endowment, which is ridiculous. If it's the Lord's money and they got it in there to give away, give it away. Okay? And so the other thing is there's no anonymity. Okay? I can look up every private foundation and say, yeah, I know how much you've got, and they're at risk. Okay, so what we do with anyone who has that, there's only two reasons to have one. One is if you've got over $50 million in a private foundation and you want to hire your children, you can do that, okay, and pay for it through that. Okay, that's one. Okay, and the second one is, one is to pay your children, two is if you got over $50 million, okay, and then it might make sense to do that. But the tax deductions, if you give to a foundation, a private foundation, your business, or any kind of asset, you only get 20% you can only deduct 20% against that asset. With a donor advised fund, you can do 30. And you don't get fair market value, you get your basis. So it's huge tax. So let me split the room here, okay? There's probably three Christian donor advised funds that you need to know about, okay? And I don't care if you use us or you use NCF, National Christian Foundation. That we came out of that, by the way. Okay, and I'm going to give you some comparisons here. They're out in Atlanta. They were started by Ron Blue. Okay, and they're different than us, but they've been around. Okay, there's NCF, and then there's Waterstone out of Texas. I mean, out of Colorado, out of the Springs. Very small. It's about, I don't know, they got maybe $300 million in assets. Okay. We're at about $1.5 billion. NCF is a little bit larger than we are, okay? So we came out of NCF. So here's the difference. We're Christian, Okay, and think about it. I give my money to the Donor Advised Fund, NCF, or Signatory, or Waterstone, okay, and I'm going to allow that money, if I'm the donor, what's your name?
Raquel.
Raquel? Raquel. We're going to rock on with Raquel, okay? Raquel. Raquel puts her $1 million over here in a Donor Advised Fund. She gets a deduction, whether that's an asset or cash or you name it, okay? She gets a $1 million deduction. Now she's got money sitting over here in this fund. It's like a charitable bank account, right? And so now she can give it, if it's with a Christian group, to the things she cares about, okay? And at the Signatory, to answer your question, we have averaged over 22 years, over 75% of the money that comes in flows out, okay? So that's a good thing. Because the people we work with, okay? And the fact that when we do talk to them about giving their money away, we want to know what they're passionate about. So we find out, we ask them, what do you care about? What are the things that you're trying to solve for? How do we partner you up with things that we can help you with, okay? Community foundations are extraordinarily liberal, okay? Very liberal. How do I know that? Because we actually own a company called Give Interactive, and I'm going to get into this later as part of how we're funded, okay? So, but we sell our product to community foundations. And they're very old school, they're very hands-on, there's no technology involved with them, but they're typically given to most of the LGBTQ causes, and anything that's Christian, they're gonna raise a flag. I mean, you've had it happen in Nashville. The one difference is, and where we're separated from NCF or any of the others, okay, is our grant policies are all the same. We all believe in life, we believe that Jesus is the way to heaven, and we believe babies, you don't abort them, okay? We're pro-life, okay? Over here on this side of the table, if I'm with Schwab, Fidelity, Vanguard, okay, any of these, and that's where, I mean, Fidelity is the largest charity in America. The Fidelity Donor Advised Fund is the largest 501c3 in America, worth over $50 billion. This is a $150 billion industry, and Fidelity is the monster, okay? Schwab's a little less than that. We're, like I said, we're like $1.5 billion. They're $50 billion, okay? And so what we're doing to attack this, and then you look at Fidelity, Schwab, Vanguard, that's where the majority of the $150 billion is. You got the three of us little Christian guys over here that's worth a total of about $5 billion, $6 billion maybe, compared to 100 and something. All right, so these guys are much cheaper, number one, than all the others. It's about three times less expensive, okay? But if your money is at Fidelity, who owns that money? If it's in a donor advised fund, they do. Okay, not you. You gave it away. They own it, right? And so you say, back to Raquel, she's like, oh, I got my money at Fidelity and I got it cheap. Well, guess who the number one funder of Planned Parenthood is? Fidelity. Most people don't know that, okay? They give money to Planned Parenthood more than anybody. They're a number one funder of it. But they got 10,000 people out there selling their stuff, and they got lots of options, okay? And you say, I want to give to Fellowship of Christian Athletes. You send a request in, and you want to grant it out, and they're going to tell you, I'm sorry, we don't grant to them. That's happening with Christian causes at secular donor advised funds around the country, okay? And it's happening more and more. We've had Christian schools where it's happened. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's written. If you're familiar with the Southern Poverty Law Group out of Montgomery, they're the ones that give the list, the hit list, of the Christian companies that are out there, and they say, don't give to them, right? Okay, because they're crazy right-wing people. So I'm trying to frame this for you. Fidelity, Schwab, they're cheaper, but your money is at risk if I'm the donor. But guess who else is at risk? The ministry. And so what the Signatory did, and where we're unique, and if you use NCF or Waterstone, they're good organizations and we're for them. But we looked at this when we left 4 years ago and said, our competition is not our brother, okay? Our competition is this side of the table, Fidelity, Schwab, Vanguard, the secular people. And so we saw this huge transfer of wealth coming, and when you have a huge transfer of wealth, what's going to happen to pricing? Oh, big supply, causes low pricing, right? The more supply there is, the less it costs, right? Okay, that's why housing, okay, the housing, there's no houses, so you pay a lot for it, right? Well, this transfer of wealth, if you're an advisor, then you're going to be squeezed down to almost nothing what you're making, all right? And so we saw our model of we make money two ways, traditionally, same way they do in NCF. Assets under management, okay? Y'all learning some new AUM. AUM is assets under management. So if there's $1 billion over here that we have, $1.5 billion or whatever, then NCF charges about 100 basis points or 1% of that money, okay? And if you sold a company and you sold your company for $10 million, they charge 5% to do that transaction. And that's okay, that's their model. They're based on fees, okay? And so you would be paying $500,000 in fees. That's pretty expensive. Well, when we left, we said, you know what? We're a ministry and we're not gonna charge any fees. So the Signatory, we make no money for holding the money, which that was the one thing that was different, Chandler. Fidelity's making money, okay? We make zero and we charge zero fees for doing the transaction. Zero. That's a great question. So where does our funding come from, right? So we have businesses we own, operate, or have equity in, okay? So we own, how many of you use iDonate? You know about iDonate? Credit card processing company, we own a percentage of that, okay? We actually have intellectual property that Bill High has written for family legacy stuff that's being scaled. That's going to actually be in 10 Christian universities. That'll be a revenue share with those universities from a certificate all the way to a PhD. So we'll do a 20% rev share with the university, okay? We have, when we left NCF, we built our own software company. So we own the enterprise platform that we operate on. We built that and own it, and we sell that to the community foundations. Okay, so we've already got several big clients, and we have a private equity group. We got a real estate fund, and so we do a lot of investing because that's kind of who we work with, so we're pretty good at it, all right? Let me finish this, and I'll come right to you. So that's the intellectual property, the businesses we own and operate, and then we have some families that said, if you're going to zero, we want to help you. Because you're charging no fees, we want to pass this on, okay? If we can move more money to the kingdom, then we don't want you going out of business. And so we had some people give us enough money to do away with fees, okay? And said, you're going to need about $15 million. Well, we've raised about, I don't know, 13 of that. And so they're like, that gives you enough time for your businesses to generate. So whenever you put your money at the Signatory, you can have it invested different places. In our private equity holdings, or our real estate fund, or biblically responsible pools, and they pay us money not from the donor, but from their profit. Okay, so we generate money very uniquely. Okay, so it's not costing the donor a dime. If the donor wants anonymity, who does the good deed? Who's doing the good deed at every ministry? The donor or the ministry? The donor. It's that donor's money that the Lord gave them to steward. And if they don't want you to know, and they set that up intentionally, okay, then I think that ought to be a place where, as the ministry, they're doing the good deed. Now, did you get to ask them for as much as you wanted? Maybe not, but here's what I would tell you. If you ask the group that has that, I don't know if you've done this, you can call. I mean, I've had calls and said, can you find out, and I'll call and ask, do you mind? And if they put it in their request to say, we don't want anybody knowing, then we have to respect that. So what we've done is a pilot around the country with all the Fidelity, all the RIAs, Registered Investment Advisors, and said, if you could take your Fidelity clients and bring them to the Signatory at zero fees, would you move them? And they're like, 100% of them. Why are we doing that? So our goal, and here's where that's why we do what we do. This right here, this $68 trillion, We did a study a little over a year and a half ago, and we looked at the top 50 ministries in America, the biggest ones that are out there, okay? And it's easy to go back and reverse engineer and look at their 990s, okay? And we could tell how much money was going to those ministries in a DAF, as a DAF gift. And so we extracted that information, and we found that there's over $25 billion of Christians' money that's coming from secular DAFs. And so we're like, we don't want to hold the money, because we don't make any money if we hold it anyway. Now, NCF has to hold it, because that's how they get paid. All right, and they got 370 employees, we got 46, because we got good software. That's the difference there. So our goal was to move the money from Fidelity, Schwab, and Vanguard, and we'll have over $5 billion flow through the Signatory in the next 12 months. When we publicly do this, it'll even be bigger than that. So we're positioned to help ministries like no one else in the world, which I know it's probably time. So tonight for homework, okay, please go. Has anybody seen this? He Gets Us? Nobody? All right, that's because you don't live in New York, L.A., Miami, Chicago. Okay, this is the largest campaign effort in the history of mankind for the cause of Christ in the United States that the Signatory is running. And we did a study. How much time? What time is it? 3:30. I'll do this in 2 minutes. I want you to know what you're looking at. Go to hegetsus.com, and there are 9 commercials. When you go to hegetsus.com and go to the top where the little bars are, click that and hit watch. And there are 9 videos. And one of them is a video of Jesus, and it says teen mom. It says teen mom giving birth. Jesus was born to a teen mom. That's your story. That is your story, okay? And we spent 6 months with the largest research firm in America that did a study with 650,000 people, and if you know what it costs to do an interview, it's at least $1,000 per interview, okay? We spent over $1 million just to do the study, to ask the question in America, when you hear the name Jesus, what do you think? And what came back was on the far left-hand side were us, committed Christians. On the other side were atheists, agnostics. In the middle was 54% of Americans split down the middle, skeptics and cultural Christians. And what we know was we know where they are. We know where they spend time. And so we launched a campaign in 10 cities the last 5 weeks of the year. And if you go look this up, you'll find that in those 10 cities, we had churches that were ready to receive phone calls, okay, and emails and live chats. We had over 30 million people see the commercial or billboard, and it was on every social media platform. And those 30 million people actually were partnered with YouVersion, so we had thousands and thousands first week. Over 20,000 signed up for YouVersion first time. And read the Bible for a week on their own. Unbelievable. We had people that were filtering down, going to churches, asking for prayers. And you go look at this, and there's a place here because there's an ecosystem that has been built, that 35,000 churches I told you about earlier, that you guys need to be aware of, okay, that's out there. And it's the Amazon for the church. They started selling books, but it's the windmill and well theory. There's an ecosystem for all of us out there now. Okay? It's time for y'all to leave. I am sorry. If I rambled a little, ask me questions because there's a lot here and don't expect to get it all today. Okay? I want to help you. Okay? That's the only reason why I'm here.